This month, Crisis Magazine celebrates its 40th anniversary. And so in honor of that, I'm going to take a look back at the last 40 years of crisis, but also look to the future and answer the question of how should Catholics live in the midst of today's deep crisis in both the church and in the world. Hello, I'm Eric Simmons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine, obviously. Thank you very much for joining us today. Before we get started, let me just invite people to smash that like button and to subscribe to the channel wherever you might watch it, wherever you might listen to it. Don't bother setting up the notifications because you have a life. Okay. Also, Crisis Magazine's at a lot of different channels, so social media channels. Usually it's at Crisis Mag. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Gitter, Gab. I think we had Truth Social recently, MeWe. So you can follow us there. We're on Telegram. We have a Telegram chat where you can talk about our articles and things like that. So just check us out in all those places. Okay, so like I said, today is the, this month, I should say, is the 40th anniversary of Crisis Magazine. We have a number of articles today on the site about this. I have this, if you're watching this, you can see here some of the different covers. Crisis Magazine was, the first issue was November 1982, and it was called Catholicism in Crisis. As you can kind of see from the cover I'm showing up on the screen right now, it was just a paper journal. It was called A Journal of Lay Catholic Opinion was the subtitle. And it really was a journal more than a magazine at that point. And in 1980, and so it was founded by Ralph McInerney and Michael Novak. And in 1982, like I said, and it was a journal and it was founded. It was based at Notre Dame, actually, owned by the Brownstone Institute. What I'm going to do here today, just to take a step back, is I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of crisis. And I think it's fascinating because it reflects in a way the history of American Catholicism during this time as well. So I'm going to talk about that. And then I'm going to kind of reflect on where we've come, but where we're going as a magazine and as American Catholics. And basically kind of answer the question is, how do we deal with what's going on in the church today and in the world. So like I said, Crisis was founded in 1982 by Michael Novak and Ralph McInerney, who are pretty well known. They're known as, they're both passed away now. May they rest in peace. They're both known as neoconservative Catholics, and definitely Crisis Magazine, Crisis Journal early on, was known as a neoconservative Catholic journal, Catholic magazine. And so it was founded in 1982 called Catholicism in Crisis. In 1986, they changed the name to Crisis. The story is Layla Lawler told me this, the wife of Phil Lawler, who was an editor back then, told me that I think it was either she or Phil who thought of it. She might have told me this on a podcast. I can't remember now. Thought of the idea of let's just cut it down to Crisis because they were expanding a little bit. It wasn't just Catholicism in Crisis, but more than that. But really, when Crisis was founded, it really had to do with both McInerney and Novak really saw a problem, frankly, with USCCB. I can't remember if it was called USCCB back then, but the National Conference of Catholic Bishops, which we still have a problem with today. So some things change, some things don't. And so really, what they saw was a problem in that the bishops were becoming too strictly political, and they were basically replacing their spiritual roles with political roles. And from the first editorial, from that first issue of Catholicism Crisis, they wrote, "The crisis in which we find ourselves is one of faith and theology, especially concerning questions of the temporal order and the role of the laity." And this is a key point they're making, that basically the clergy were trying to take lay roles, and the laity were trying to take clerical roles. It says, "The crisis is that clerical power, not only in the bishops and their administrative stalls, have become overweening. This is a direct consequence of so-called Vatican II theology. And they say it weakens laymen and laywomen in their proper vocation. They say it's the misuse of the collegiality of bishops in itself. Linked to the preeminent authority of the Pope, such collegiality is good. But certain institutional developments seem to us quite errant. National conferences of bishops are bringing political divisions into the church." I mean, they're hitting it right on the head back in 1982, the problem of the National Conference of Bishops. They talk about the diminishment of the clergy. How, and they say many younger clergymen stress the priesthood of the laity in a false way. So to diminish the distinctiveness of their own priestly role and in effect merely to patronize the laity. I think it's interesting they say in 1982, many younger clergymen, of course, today the opposite is true. It's those same exact clergymen who were young in 1982 who are emphasizing, overemphasizing the priesthood of the laity and diminishing the sacramental nature of the clergy. And now today, the younger clergy are much more likely to recognize the distinction, the distinct differences between the clergy and the laity. They also talk about the distinction between vocations being faded. Clergymen are everywhere preempting lay roles. There is a clericalization of the Catholic Church, worse not even before the council. More often than not, priests and bishops make political, economic, and social pronouncements about the temporal order, which the laity are expected slowly to react. So basically, they're talking about the idea that the clergy are turning the gospel into a social justice message, a political message. I mean, you see this today very much so. There's a certain archbishop, I think the Archbishop of San Antonio on Twitter, who's constantly making political tweets. Very rarely does he bring in anything at all about Catholicism. He will talk about gun culture and getting rid of guns and violence and that, but never does he talk about the fact that this is fundamentally a spiritual issue. And that's his job, is to talk about that. Back in 1982, they wrote, "The crisis in the Catholic Church in 1982 is that the church seems in danger of losing its true, original, and profound identity in order to become what is not, an instrument of temporal power. Nearly always today, this temporal assertion of the church is leftward in its force, as in former times it was often rightward." And that's a great point. I mean, obviously, we know it's true today when we talk about this, about the fact that all the political movement of the hierarchy, particularly from the Vatican, the USCCB, is typically leftward. It's advocating for left-wing things. And when it does advocate for right-wing things, like, for example, the protection of the unborn, it's usually much more muted, much more, let's try to be more understanding of different views and things like that. And so that really, though, was why Catholicism in Crisis was founded, by Novak and McInerney. And so it basically then, for the first about 12 years of its existence, it was a journal. And like I said, it changed to the name Crisis in 1986. But in 1994, it really made a big shift, Crisis Magazine did. It became a true magazine. If you're looking at the screen, you can see the covers, how it becomes a full-color magazine. And it starts to include a lot more than just being a journal. It's not just talking about theology and politics, but also it's talking about culture, about the arts. And so what we see here is now it's become a full magazine in 1994. And really, this is because of the editor at the time, the new editor, D.L. Hudson. Now, before D.L. Hudson, there was a number of editors that are well-known now. Phil Lawler, who is still fighting the great fight. I mean, Phil is great. We love him here. He was an editor of Crisis in the very early days. Dinesh D'Souza, who I'm probably most people know. He's pretty well-known, prominent conservative figure today. He was an editor of Crisis Magazine in the late 80s, early 90s. We also had some other ones, but D.L. Hudson, he took over as the editor-in-chief in, I think it was 1994, turned it into a magazine, a very full-color, glossy magazine, and the subscription rate really skyrocketed over the years. At its high point in 2003, Crisis had 33,000 print subscribers. And that might not sound a lot if you're thinking of like something like Time Magazine in its heyday or something like that. But for a relatively niche Catholic magazine, that's a lot. That was a big number. And that was in 2003. That was really the highlight. And this was also the high point of Crisis's influence, I think, on politics. At the time, D.L. Hudson was very much involved in the Bush administration, George W. Bush. He was basically in charge of their Catholic outreach. He was very influential at the White House and very influential in politics. And so really that was the kind of the high point of Crisis's influence on the political realm was back there in the early 2000s. But then, you know, I think we can't just, I hate it when people whitewash history, try to act like things that happened in the past didn't actually happen if they make you look bad. But the truth is there was a scandal. It came out that Deal Hudson had inappropriate relationship with a student years before he became editor of Crisis. And this was not known. It became known. He stepped down from his relationship with the Bush administration. And soon after that, he also stepped down as editor of Crisis. And this was also, and so the subscriptions for Crisis began to decline, the print subscriptions. But we also just remember when this was early 2000s, the first decade 2000. This is when the print industry was dying. This was not just simply a matter of because Deal left or something like that. This was a matter of everything was going downhill for the print industry. It was becoming incredibly expensive to print magazines. A lot of people just didn't bother to pay for them because they could just get all this information on the internet. And so really, I think that people really looked at this as the decline of the print industry in general, and Crisis was no different. And so in 2007, 25 years after it started, Crisis decided to go completely internet, just all completely online, and stop the print magazine. Now, I will admit, as a somewhat older person, I like print magazines. I don't get any because there aren't any very much anymore. I think I get one. And I like them, but there's just no way you can make a viable business model in our industry with a print magazine. You would just have to have it funded by some deep pockets, because you're not going to get it by print subscriptions. That would not be able to pay for all that it would be involved. Oh, somebody in the comments real quick asked, is Dinesh D'Souza Catholic? He was then. I'm not 100% sure if he is now. I actually don't know what happened, like what his story is. But back then he was Catholic. And so anyway, let's get back to the story. So in 2007, Crisis went completely online. And it first tried to have a different name. And so it was InsideCatholic.com. I think it was kind of the whole idea of, okay, we're going online. Let's make this a hub for Catholic things. We'll call it Inside Catholic. But it wasn't much longer after that they realized, the Crisis people realized, that just doesn't make any sense because people know the Crisis name. Let's just go ahead and make it CrisisMagazine.com. And so that's exactly what happened was in... couple years, I can't remember how long it was InsideCatholic.com before they went back to CrisisMagazine.com. But since 2007, we've been a completely online magazine. We've had a few editors since then. In 2012, I think it was, maybe 2013, Sophia Institute Press bought out Crisis Magazine, took it over. And since then, there's really been growth. I would attribute Crisis kind of coming back. Like I said, the high point of the print magazine was 2003. And then there was a decline, and the influence of Crisis declined. And so I would say in the late 2000s, early 2010s was probably the low point for Crisis as far as its influence, as far as its reach. But then since Sophia took over, there has been a continual increase in the readership of Crisis. I mean, we reach way, way more people than we ever would have as a print magazine. Obviously, that's true for most former print magazines. And so we've been increasing. And so now, and I've been the editor since January 1st of 2001. So coming up on 2 years here, I took over from Michael Warren Davis, great guy, my predecessor. I just want to mention him for a minute. He's just, first of all, just a great guy. And he was so generous to me when I took over of explaining, okay, how things run, how to make sure everything is running at the website, people to contact, things like that. And anytime I've ever asked him a question, he has been quick to say, yep, here, how can I help you? And he also still writes for us, which I enjoy his perspective in a lot of times. And so I really think, oh, I just want to give him a shout out. Michael Warren Davis, you know, is my predecessor, just being a great guy, great editor. And he really helped to move Crisis forward as well. And hopefully we're doing the same today. So one thing that's interesting, though, I think about Crisis is, like I said, it had a certain reputation for a long time as a neoconservative Catholic magazine, very neoconservative in its politics. Very much JP2, Benedict the 16th type of Catholic, conservative Catholic, That was its reputation, well-earned, I mean, well-deserved reputation for decades. But I do think, though, we've changed over the years. As part of this, I was going back on some of the old articles. Fortunately, all the articles that have been published by Crisis are available for free on our website. And so you can actually go back and look at what we wrote in years past. And I found some things that just frankly, today, when you read them, they're pretty cringe because they're super neoconservative. And we're really not there anymore. And this is definitely partly due to me being the editor over the past 2 years, because I'm not a neocon, but even before me, because neither is Michael Warren Davis. And really, there's been a shift just within American Catholicism away from neoconservatism. It's not just individuals just like me or Michael Warren Davis, something like that, but a lot of people have started to see a lot of the flaws in neoconservatism. I mean, if you want to know how neoconservative Crisis was, George Weigel wrote an article in the very first issue of Crisis magazine in 1982. And so, I mean, he's the neocon's neocon. And lately, though, we've written a number of articles critical of George Weigel. We don't run his stuff anymore. Not that we've canceled him, just we don't really have any desire to run it. It gets run other places, and I don't think he's saying anything that's very helpful for Catholics today. But I think, though, I think that that's a sign of the neoconservative past. But also, like, for example, in January of 1991, this is right before America is about to invade Iraq over its invasion of Kuwait. And Michael Novak, who was definitely a neocon, again, rest in peace. He had an article where he's defending this, basically attacking the bishops for not being enthusiastic about this war. And he brings out a lot of the tropes the neocons have for every conflict, to justify every conflict. This line, of course, is the prime example. Appeasing Saddam Hussein in 1990 may one day come to seem eerily similar to having coddled Adolf Hitler in 1936. I mean, my gosh, for the neocons, every war is Hitler, Chamberlain, appeasement, World War II. I mean, every single one. There's literally not any other conflict in world history that's ever used in the playbook of the neocon. And we see it here. And honestly, when you read this today, you know how much a joke that is. Saddam Hussein was never the threat that Adolf Hitler was. It was never a comparable situation. In fact, the better comp is probably World War I, where localized conflicts have the danger of being conflated into major world wars, which is exactly what could have happened. And in fact, the invasion of Iraq in 1991 was part of the thing of a series of events that led to 9/11. Now, I know people are like, well, you're blaming 9/11 on America. No, I'm not. I'm blaming on Osama bin Laden. But Osama bin Laden didn't exist in a vacuum. He was able to recruit because of things that we had done in the past, including the invasion of Iraq in 1991. And so, but we see it here in 1991 at Crisis Magazine. The article is attacking the bishops. The interesting thing, of course, the two bishops that Novak brings into mind are Mahoney. Cardinal Mahoney, I think it was Archbishop Mahoney at the time, who was awful. Archbishop Palarchik, who was the Archbishop of Cincinnati, and he was the head of the USCCB at the time, who was also awful. But they actually were right about this. They were right about the fact that the Iraq War I was not justified, and neither was Iraq War II. But then we see another article from Senator Rick Santorum in 2003, in which he's arguing that the war in Iraq is just, and he's arguing against, at this time, the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Wilton Gregory, another name that is familiar to most of us and one that makes us cringe. He said, President George W. Bush, this is Santorum talking, with Congress's blessing, made a moral decision to use force as a last resort to topple Saddam Hussein's tyrannical regime, and Operation Iraqi Freedom was a success. I mean, my goodness, it is hard to read that and not just have a complete cringe reaction to it. First of all, the idea that a moral decision, it was an immoral decision to use force as a last resort. There is no way you can argue today that the Second Iraq War was a last resort. I mean, my goodness, it wasn't even justified, but clearly was not a last resort. And then to topple Saddam Hussein's tyrannical regime, well, Senator Santorum, what about other tyrannical regimes? Do we have to topple all of them as well? Is that is that a just war? And then say Operation Iraqi Freedom was a success. We all know it was a complete and utter failure. And there's no other way you can put it today. But that's what was in Crisis Magazine in 2003. And then one more example is in 2006, after things start looking not so good in Iraq, there's another article in which Crisis is defending this. It says, should the principles of engagement be those of just war? Should the principles of engagement be those of the just war? I am confident that both Americans and Israelites have consistently observed them. In Afghanistan, Iraq, and most recently Lebanon, the observation has been methodical. Each war has been waged as a last resort after exhausting the possibilities for diplomacy. Each has been commanded by a legitimate authority against an enemy whose authority was self-proclaimed. Each has been pursued to redress a tangible wrong and with some real prospect of victory. Okay, Afghanistan, real prospect of victory. What actually happened? It was 20 years, lots of people died, and no victory. And it just goes on and goes on and on talking about how these were just wars. Now, I will say that Crisis in 2008 did have a debate on its pages or online about the morality of the Iraq war leading into the election of 2008, whether or not it was moral. And you had on one, so they did have two sides, one saying it was just, one saying it was not just. So I do say at that point, Crisis had started to see maybe all these endless wars aren't so great. Maybe the neocon narrative isn't so great. But definitely in its first 20 some years, Crisis, like all neocons, didn't see any American war or conflict it didn't endorse. And so we've definitely gotten away from that here at Crisis. Now, I will say, so we're not quite as neoconservative, definitely not as Republican as we were back then. And so that's probably the evolution. I'll talk about that more here in a second. The other thing that's on politics. In the aspect of the church, there's no question that Crisis has become more what you call traditional. Obviously, I consider myself a traditional Catholic as the editor, but we publish definitely, I would say, I actually don't know. I'd love to do a survey. I got to do a survey someday on our readers and how many of them would label themselves conservative versus traditional Catholic versus something else. But I would guess that still the majority of our readers would call themselves conservative Catholics, not traditional Catholics. And a lot of our writers, I would say the majority of our writers would probably call themselves conservative Catholic rather than traditional Catholic. But the point is that you definitely saw in years past, decades past, Crisis Magazine was very antagonistical against traditional Catholics. In fact, there's a story that goes back about how Crisis was it in the pages of Crisis, they were attacking Remnant Magazine, Michael Matt and his organization. And now I consider them friends. I consider them friendly, I should say. I don't know Michael Matt, but I consider them part of the same team, so to speak. And so we've definitely gotten more friendly to traditional Catholicism is probably a better way to put it than say that Crisis is a traditional magazine, because we're not. We're not a traditional Catholic magazine. We're friendly to it. So what is Crisis Magazine today? I think that's people, I get emails sometimes from people who assume we're a traditional Catholic magazine because I'm a traditional Catholic, or that we're neocon still, or whatever the case may be. I would say that obviously we're no longer neocon. We're not cheerleaders anymore for the Republican Party, which Crisis was, frankly, in the early 2000s. We're cheerleaders for the Republican Party and basically just did not want to criticize the Republicans. That's not true anymore. Now, we're running an article tomorrow, literally tomorrow, that says why I'm voting Republican. And so it's not that we're anti-Republican Party either. We just are willing to see the flaws in being too embedded with one party. My personal opinion is that Crisis was too embedded with the Republican Party many years ago. And it went away from that before I came on board. But it really is. I think that was a real problem. I don't think that either of the two major parties fully represent a Catholic view of politics. I do think, I was explaining to my kids the other day, I was helping my mom vote, and I was explaining to them, Democrat Party, Republican Party. I said, here's how you can understand it, kids. The Democrat Party is evil. And the Republican Party is stupid. That pretty much sums it up. But the Republican Party definitely gets more right than the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party is just very difficult to justify. I don't see how a Catholic can justify being supportive of it. in recent years in particular. Obviously, there's support of abortion, but now transgenderism, gay marriage, all that stuff. But at the same time, we have gotten, Crisis Magazine has also started to veer from the conservative movement as well. What I mean by that is a lot of conservatism is very much now embracing yesterday's liberalism. And you see, particularly in the issue of homosexuality, because there are very prominent people like Dave Rubin who are outwardly gay in a gay marriage. I'll put my scare quotes, marriage, and, you know, adopting kids, and conservative ink, so to speak, is endorsing that. We don't. We will not endorse sin. And we've had Austin Ruse, our one of our regular contributors, who's been great on this. I mean, he is very much, I mean, Austin Ruse is a conservative. He's a conservative Catholic. He's very much a supporter of Donald Trump. I mean, this is a guy who has been a conservative, political conservative for decades. And he is not on board with where conservative movement's going. And God bless him. He's absolutely right about this. And so we are not going to endorse gay marriage or any of the things that the conservative movement has started to move towards, because we're Catholic. We can't endorse that. So that's where we start to, get away from that. And so Anthony in the comments is saying, am I going to come on full on as an ANCAP? No. We're not. I'm not an ANCAP, which is a narco-capitalist. I'm what I would call a minimalist monarchist. How's that? I'll just leave it that. You can figure out what that means. Okay, so when it comes to politics, again, we're no longer neocon. We're drifting away from the conservative party because the conservative party is drifting away from conservatism. And so we're not really going to endorse that. Things like gay marriage. I mean, it would not shock me if some significant conservative figures in 5 years from now are completely endorsing transgenderism. I mean, that's just the way things have gone. They were against gay marriage, they were against abortion, and now more and more of them are accepting those things. When it comes to the church, what is Crisis Magazine today? Like I said, we're not neocon, we're not conservative, we're not traditional. I wouldn't say we're either. We embrace both. And I do know there are real differences between conservative Catholics and traditional Catholics. We're obviously not liberal Catholics because liberal Catholics aren't really Catholic in practice. But I do believe that there is a lot that conservative and traditional Catholics can unite on in fighting the problems we have today in the church. And so I also think that most of the differences are a matter of prudence, a matter of judgment. And I think we should allow all voices here. I mean, the fact is that I really think that when it comes to combating the crisis in the church today, both conservative and traditional Catholics have a lot of important things to say. And so I am going to want to give voice to those who are both conservative and traditional. In the past, it was only conservative Catholics at Crisis. Now I do want to give a voice more to traditional Catholics as well. Obviously, I'm one myself. Kennedy Hall, another one of our regular contributors. The funny thing is, two of our regular contributors who contribute every other Friday, Kennedy Hall and Austin Ruse, they're a good microcosm for what I think Crisis Magazine is, because they probably agree on like 98% of stuff. But Austin Ruse is a good conservative Novus Ordo attending Catholic, whereas Kennedy Hall is a traditional Latin Mass attending Catholic. Actually, he attends a Society of St. Pius X. You might think, okay, these two are extremes, but I don't really see them as extremes. I think there's a lot of common ground there. They're going to write things that they might not agree with each other on at times, but I think it's within I wouldn't call it a big tent because we're not letting everybody in, but it is the tent of Catholicism as I see it. And so that's where I think we are today. I think that when it comes to politics, obviously we embrace some conservative aspects, libertarian aspects. Obviously, I basically consider myself a libertarian, so we have libertarian views in there as well. And when it comes to the church, we have conservative and traditional. But I think all of it though comes to the matter of nothing that ever contradicts what the Catholic Church teaches. We are not going to ever print heresy. If we ever do, let me know and I will get rid of it immediately. We're not going to do anything like that. But we're going to allow a lot of different judgments on how best to navigate this crisis. And really, that's what it comes down to. And so I really think that today is a great day for this because today's All Saints Day, the Feast of All Saints. Ultimately, what this always comes down to, and this is really the mission of Crisis, is becoming saints. How can we best become saints? Because the fact is, the crisis today, the reason it's a crisis is because it prevents us from becoming saints. That's why we have to fight it. It's not about, okay, try to become a traditional Catholic or try to become a conservative Catholic. No, it's about becoming a saint. And whatever is the best way to become a saint, that's what we need to embrace. Because remember, being traditional, being conservative, that's a means to an end. That's not the end. Sometimes people like will attack me and say, oh, you're not really a trad Catholic. Okay, whatever. I don't care. I don't care if you consider me a semi-trad or a trad or a conservative or whatever you consider me. Ultimately, what it is, it's about becoming a saint. And so if I personally think, at least in my own life and what I've seen, that living out a traditional Catholic life is the best way to become a saint today. I really do think that. I think it's the best way to become a saint. I do know, though, some very holy, Novus Ordo attending Catholics. And so I'm not going to jump on their grill and be like, oh, you're not doing things the way I want you to do it. I'm going to explain why I think this is the best way, but I'm going to let them explain why they think their way is the best way, as long as it's within, obviously, Orthodox Catholicism. I'm not going to silence those who aren't exactly in lockstep with me. And so I don't think we need to force each other into our camps. I think we should advocate for our camps, because if we believe our camp is the best way to become a saint, hey, let's advocate for it. Let's fight for it. And so we can have these debates inside the church without canceling each other. Yes, we're not going to have debates on let's become a liberal progressive Catholic, be like Father James Martin or something like that. That's obviously out of bounds because it's not part of a true Catholicism. But we can have debates within Orthodox Catholicism. We have to understand the world we live in. And so, again, this is another criticism we've gotten at Crisis in the past, although we get less now, which is, you know, your name Crisis, that means you're always thinking about crisis. You're always upset. You're always fighting, whatever. No, the point of it is the reality we live in is in crisis. The church is in crisis. The world is in crisis. If we want to become saints, we have to overcome that crisis. We have to. And so we have to understand it. And that's one of the main jobs of Crisis Magazine. Understand the crisis we're in, be able to see it with a Catholic through a Catholic lens, and then have steps to overcome it. Have steps to not let that crisis keep you from being a saint. Now, I was at the Blessed Carl Symposium a couple weeks ago. I gave a brief talk there, and I mentioned something that might surprise people. Crisis Magazine is celebrating 40 years. I actually hope we're not here in 40 years from now. What I mean by that is I hope there's not a need for Crisis Magazine. I hope there's not a crisis in the church, not a crisis in the world in 40 years. Now, the world being the way it is, it's likely there will be a crisis and we'll still be needed. And as long as we're needed, we will continue to fight for Catholicism, fight for our place in the public square. We're going to be around as long as the crisis exists. Hopefully I'll be around for quite some time as well. But even after I've left crisis or left this world and other people are taking over, we're going to try to help people become saints, because that's really what it's all about. So that's my brief history of Crisis Magazine, what we've been through, how we've changed, what we are today, and most importantly, how we can all help each other to become saints. Okay, everybody, happy Feast of All Saints. Until next time, God love you.